Welcome to this week's podcast, Protocol 80 Over Coffee. Sorry we missed last week, but we're hopefully back on schedule. There's some news, some blog stuff that we have to talk about today, and we're pretty excited about it.
I can't wait. I'm pumped up.
We're preparing for 3 to 6 to 25 inches of snow today, and you can quote me on that. I'll be up first since someone missed Monday. My first post of the week probably won't help you out too much as a small business, but I thought it was interesting.
Thanks for nothing.
My first post is called, What Will Google Buy Next? I think that over the past several years, Google has been known to buy a lot of things. If you follow them at all, you probably know that they acquire many things, some of the bigger ones like YouTube, ReCAPTCHA. Were some of the bigger ones. And I think one of the general things that people think about this is that they're just either buying up the competition so they don't have competition, or just buying things to shut them down or whatever. But some people believe that this might be going against Google's mantra of don't be evil. I, in the past, have kind of agreed that the purchasing of competition just because you're the big guy and you have the money was kind of against that mantra of don't be evil. But I did a little more thinking about it, and the recent purchases this week of Beat That Quote and Next New Networks got me thinking again and say, what do they actually do with these? And Dave asked me the same question, so I looked into that. And what I was surprised at was the volume of purchases that they've made of, or acquisitions that they've made over the years of 90-plus companies. They actually use that technology and put it into place in most cases. For example, the Next New Networks will be used for YouTube. And I just thought, well, where would these startup tech companies that are getting purchased, where would they be? If they weren't purchased nowadays, would they still be even in existence, or was this kind of a godsend for them? And a lot of these startups start up just to get bought anyway, so they start up for the reason of getting bought. So I guess that kind of changed my philosophy and my thought on it was, yes, they're buying these companies, and I'm a big Google fan. I use a lot of their products, and I think some of the products that we have now that we're able to use at such a high level are better because they purchased some of these products that would have taken a lot longer to develop if it would have been done in-house. So I guess that's my take on it. I don't think that it's evil.
I don't think that it's evil either. In a lot of cases, they're buying private companies that don't have to sell if they don't want to. It's not like Google's going in and buying a whole bunch of shares of their company to the point right. where they have a controlling interest. So in most cases, I would say, even if they don't do anything with them yet, or they bought them and found out that that's maybe not something they could work with that they thought they could, you know, like I said, most of them are private businesses, so they had a choice whether or not Google bought mm-hmm. them or not.
And I think one of the things that people hear about it in the news, and I think Google gets a little more publicity when they buy things. And then maybe people are saying, well, you know, the other engines aren't there out there buying things. But if you look at Microsoft acquisitions over
Apple,
the years,
especially,
they have so many. Yeah. And
Microsoft bought Apple?
They did.
You heard it here first. Microsoft now owns Apple.
But I think that's like just something that all the big players in the tech industry do, Apple, Microsoft, Google. They're
Protocol
all
80.
Protocol 80, of course. So sometimes they buy them and, like Josh said, integrate them right into obvious services. And I think sometimes they buy them for the talent.
Mm-hmm.
And if they think that they can rework what a company's working on to a different project down the road, then.
I wonder how many of these startups are starting up and they're like, well, we're going to be the next big thing. And then they get an offer that's pretty significant from Google. And maybe they're just like on the fence, you know, should we sell, should we not?
Right.
That's a tough one, but at the same time, they're probably walking away with some ducats.
No. They actually don't.
Always give stuff away.
Right.
That's, you know, if Google approached us, we would just be like, you know what, just take us.
Right. We wouldn't even need
physically, it. I mean.
Yes. You can leave my family and everything. Just take me. like a spaceship. I think I was next because I was supposed to be before Josh, but I kind of missed Monday. So I did two on Wednesday. and this week I focused all on realtors in smaller areas and in some bigger areas. Every time I drive by a real estate sign, I think, man, wouldn't it be nice if I could snap a picture of a barcode on there, or if there was a little more information I could get while I'm looking at the house and driving by than having to make a mental note to go back to a website to look it up, because I'm not at all in the house buying mode right now, or nor will I be for quite a while. But I still see houses all the time. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting house. I wonder what the kitchen's like or whatever. So I had three posts this week all about realtors, and if you guys are okay with it, I'll discuss them all at once. Yeah.
Of course.
You know, even though my other one was on Thursday. So my first one was about three development needs of rural real estate agents. And when I speak to development needs, it's specifically their website, not social media development or mobile development. I touch on mobile in a little bit, but three needs that I see smaller real estate agents' websites drastically have. So the first one is a professional look and feel to the site with a consistent layout and a consistent look for all the house listings and so forth. So that was the first thing I said. And as we've discussed many times in the past, online, your website's look and feel is like your storefront or office's facade. If it looks terrible, it's a terrible representation of your business. Even if it's worked for the past 12 years, mm-hmm. And your building is maybe worked for the past 12 years, your building needs and design haven't changed nearly as much as the web has changed over the past 12 years. So it's vital to have a nice looking professional site. It doesn't have to be a $1 zillion design, but it needs to look better than Front Page from the early 2000s, which we see a lot with rural realtors.
Mm-hmm.
So aside from professional look and feel, I also think that they would benefit greatly from a content management system. And as I mentioned in the post, you know, 95%+ of our clients use a content management system and purchase our content management system, C80, to maintain their website, because it lessens the ongoing expense by making it possible for you to continue maintaining your site, because it looks like a lot of the realtors do maintain their own sites with Front Page or something like that. So it allows you to keep doing that without having to pay us to make changes to a freshly designed site. And it's usually a lot more user-friendly and generates a lot nicer code than Front Page does. Front Page is kind of, as I mentioned in the blog post, Front Page is really junk, and there's a reason they discontinued it and don't provide it anymore. It's because it produced garbage code, and it's not worth having a site in. The third element of web development that I think that most real estate agents need and do not have, especially small ones, is a property database of some sort. And maybe they have one. They have a spreadsheet that they keep track of all their properties in, but I mean something associated with the website. So a system to store the data for all their new listings and an easy administrative interface to add new properties, photos, details, show and hide them on the website. There's a couple of big advantages to that. One, it's searchable that way. So if you look at Heil, H-E-I-L, and Andrews, A-N-D-R-E-W-S, construction.com. I'm not going to spell the whole thing out. I'll be here all day. There's a nice filter on the left of their site that we developed. So you could say, I want a ranch home or I want a two-story home, or show me both within these square footage ranges, and I want it to be a log home. Search, and then all of the results come back. Well, if a real estate agent, and you see this on larger real estate agent sites like Coldwell Banker and so forth, you can enter criteria like that and get only the listings that apply to what you're looking for. Maybe I don't want to spend more than $200,000. But in these static sites that are kind of crappy, you kind of have to hunt around and look for exactly what you want. Mm-hmm. So the search would help users quite a bit. And then the other thing is it would produce consistent formatting. So the developer sets up pages that display your listing of all your properties, and they're all consistent with a left aligned image, the name or the address of the home, the square footage, and the price. You click through and you have a nice detail page of the property that's the exact same format as all of the other homes that are listed on the site, versus kind of a hodgepodge page that you see by most realtors where it's like a huge long page of 400 images, which I like the large images, but I'd like to be able to hover over a small mm-hmm. thumbnail of it to see versus having to scroll 10 miles through large photos and really crappy laid out data and tables that looks like junk. So yeah, I'm a little harsh on the realtors' websites, but one of the things that that I mentioned in the post is that, yes, there's more upfront cost than maintaining it yourself, so you have to pay once. There's no ongoing cost for it. But relative to the size of a commission you get on an average home between $100,000 to $200,000, that would cover the cost of it. Mm-hmm. So if you sold one home 1 year that was in that range and covered the cost of having a content management system, property database, and a nice look and feel, you could be set for the next 10 years if you really wanted to, if that's the last time.
Especially given the rate that they're updated now.
Right. Yeah.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and I personally see that it is the bigger issue in the rural area. I purchased a home in Pittsburgh, and even with the pictures on the site, when I purchased a home in Pittsburgh, the pictures that they use are photos that look excellent. Right. And then you go to the house, and you're like, yeah, this didn't look like that. Right. But the presentation there got me to go and look at the mm-hmm. house. Right. Around here, I don't want to knock anyone's site, but specifically, but it's like the complete opposite. The site is not very usable, and the photos just don't make me even want to go look at the house. Right. So I think it is big, and this is an industry where presentation is everything. So if you want your house to have curb appeal, I think that your business should have the same curb appeal.
And I also mentioned that having a content management system and some of these tools avoids the complexity of like FTP, which is a common issue where you have to, okay, well, I've got new photos of a home. Let's upload them through FTP, make sure they all exist, and transfer files back and forth. And with a content management system, property database, it's not really something that you have to worry about. So my next post kind of picked up where that left off, and it was using mobile. I think, you know, your prospects are mobile. They're driving by a house, and they see it, and they say, oh, I'm interested in that house, or I know mm-hmm. somebody who's interested in that house. So it's important that realtors start looking at incorporating some mobile options. Almost everybody has a smartphone these days, and we're supposed to, by the end of the year, have more smartphones than we do your standard feature phone or dumb phone. So why not take advantage of that and use something like a 2D barcode or QR code or Microsoft tag and put it on your for sale sign? It's such a small little graphic that can be reassigned over and over and over again. You could print them once on your signs and just reassign where it goes, you know, for each home. So if you're not familiar, I've written tons of posts on this. We all have about mm-hmm. QR codes, how they work. You basically use a smartphone with a little free scanning app, p80.mobi/apps. There's a list of apps you can use. You scan the barcode and it redirects your phone's browser to a website, or it starts to dial a phone number, or it queues up an email or text message. So you have some options. It would be really nice to send them to a mobile version of that page or of that house. So a mobile page with that house, excuse me, and then have the option right there to share in social media mm-hmm. or send to a friend mm-hmm. that might be interested, or make a contact right there and say, hey, I'm in the neighborhood. Any chance you can swing by and we can take a look at this house now?
Or I'm just going to walk in.
Or I'm going to go check and see if the door's locked. So what, you know, that ties, the QR codes tie directly to a mobile site, obviously, which I think in real estate should have things like a zip code lookup tool if you're in a large metropolitan area and there's multiple zip codes within a small area. You could quickly enter in the zip code you're interested in or the multi-list number and a way to filter down by cost and things. So if you say, hey, let's drive around today and look for some homes, you don't have to have printed out a book of paper in order to do it. So two websites doesn't necessarily mean two times the work either. If you couple a mobile site with the content management system that I talked about in my first post, you can write once and publish to both sites, which is nice. And then you're only maintaining one set of the data. And same with the property database. You could pull the data from one database and show it on both sites. My last post, beating up the realtors, was, bear with me, using other marketing tools online to promote your homes. I did a search in Facebook, for instance, for a couple of the local realtors, and neither one of them had business pages. They had Facebook Places pages, but there was no actual business page set up for them with any posts of any kind. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't even find somebody on there that said they were employed by one of the realtors, which was a big surprise to me. And social media being what it is, anytime somebody's house hunting, I can't tell you how many times myself I've seen people say, going to look at a house tonight, or hoping we can close on a house, whatever.
Right.
So there's sponsored ads you could be doing for your home, which I'm almost positive would be cheaper than the zillion newspaper ads I see for homes. And it's a great way just to maybe write a blog post or link to a page with a new home that you've listed and hope some people like it. So Facebook and social media, obviously a big thing. Blogging is another area that I think it's silly that we don't see more of. Some of the ideas I had would be showing some of the properties you just sold and comparables that you might still have in your property list, as well as tips for buying a new home, news about your agency, tax planning with respect to real estate, and maybe how regulations are impacting real estate. Those are the types of things that you can also use in newsletters, e-newsletters, which is very cheap if you use MailChimp, to send them out to as many prospects as you can. And if you're not just pushing listings down their throat, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't mind having a newsletter delivered to me through email once a week about real estate stuff. So the other thing is it increases what we call your SEO surface area. So if you're writing a bunch of blog posts, that's more opportunity for the search engines to pick up your listings.
I think the blogging is, it's amazing that no one's doing it. It's so easy because think about when you go in and look at a home, all the things that that realtor has to say about that home. You could blog. You could say, this has a most beautiful living room with 18 fireplaces
right.
in it.
Right.
And it has marble flooring. And walls.
Has walls.
Has marble walls.
Has marble walls. And they could get into the more history of the home that they usually share.
And it's, I don't know if any of you know this, but for the most part, realtors pay for their own marketing. So, for instance, if I'm selling my home and the realtor wants to market that in the local newspaper for 18 weeks, she pays for that or he pays for that.
Right.
So these other mediums where they can market that home for free, I have no idea why they wouldn't be pushing those. Mm-hmm. It's money in their pocket, and it's free marketing, basically,
that they can
do. It's amazing. I think that it's a shame. A downright shame.
Shame on them. Shame on them.
We're going to get calls from every local realtor. No one's going to want to be our...
Hopefully asking us for help to take advantage of
I don't know. It might be a little angry.
To right their wrongs for them.
The first one to market, though, in town.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Custom Facebook tabs would be a very easy opportunity, too. These are our newly listed properties.
Right.
Or start your search here.
And again, if you're using the database, that would be easy where you don't have to go in there and update that tab every time.
Negatory.
So
set it up. You set it and forget it. That's what I like to say.
Yeah.
I didn't trademark that.
Set it and forget it.
And then email marketing, which I touched on.
I don't think that was Jack O'Lane, R.I.P.
I don't know who it was.
I don't know. He's old.
Ron Popeil.
Ron, yeah.
Man.
So I have one more post that's coming up. I haven't written it yet. So you may want to make sure you want to check back for that. It's two major web marketing opportunities. Online video and a couple advanced features of a website that I think would be beneficial to realtors.
That's good. That's a little teaser for next week.
If you're a realtor, check it.
My first and only post this week was about the new version of Foursquare 3.0. There's a lot of services and websites out there that are actually making a big push this week because this weekend is South by Southwest. So a lot of services kind of are displaying new features, and Foursquare is certainly one of them.
I just wish I could be there.
Oh, I thought you were mad. You hated South by Southwest.
No, I'd love to be there.
So Foursquare is basically a check-in service. So if you're looking for something to do or a place to go in the area around you, you can load up either the website or the application, and it will show you all of the things laid out on a map that you can go take a look at. Foursquare 3.0 has a couple cool features, and I kind of took the post as one section from a user's standpoint because it's my favorite check-in service, and then one from a merchant standpoint, which is like how you set up your location on Foursquare. So from a user's standpoint, the biggest feature is called Explore. And what this does is it kind of takes a look at your friends and other people around you on your in your Foursquare area and looks at how they've rated things or maybe certain things they've done at a certain time or on a certain day. And so you can actually go into the Explore tab either in the application or on the website and either narrow it by category or do a search for something you're looking for. So if you're looking for sushi, you could type in sushi, and then the results you get back won't just be a list of, you know, whatever's closest to you. It'll be more filtered by, okay, maybe Josh left a good review for a sushi place because I'm a friend of Josh's. That'll get a high listing in the search results, and I can go take a look at that. And like I said, it also takes into account things like what time it is. So maybe it won't recommend a bar at 10 a.m. or something like that. Or
they can speak for themselves.
That's right. And like the day of the week. So if maybe Josh always checks into a place on Friday night, and he leaves good reviews then, and maybe he checks in during the week and it's not as good. If it's Friday and I check in, maybe that will get a higher listing. And if it's during the week, maybe it'll get a lower listing. So that's kind of the cool thing for users. And then from the merchant standpoint, obviously the coolest thing that merchants can do with Foursquare is set up offers. So if you go to Foursquare and claim your listing, you can actually set up different specials. And the coolest part about Foursquare 3.0 is there are now 7 different types of specials. And a lot of times the specials previously were more focused on like maybe first-time visitors. Now they're a little more heavily focused on repeat customers, so getting people to come back and check in again. I'm not going to go through the whole list of specials, but there are things like setting up a special, so like a newbie special. So maybe there's a particular special for people who come in the first time. You can also set up a special for mayors, so that'll kind of drive people to want to come back, check in, because the more frequently you check in, the higher chance you can become a mayor of that particular establishment, and you can get a special for that. And those are like unique specials. So maybe you have a 50% off discount for a mayor and a 10% discount for a newbie. And there are also loyalty specials. So if you check in frequently, but you're not the mayor, you can also set up a special for that. I think this is a big advantage for Foursquare. And if you're, it's like I say, a lot of the times there's so many different services you can take advantage of. We recommend, of course, the standbys like Facebook and Twitter. But if you're, especially if you're a retail location or if you have a brick and mortar shop or restaurant or something like that, I think taking a little bit of time to go and claim your Foursquare location and then set up a couple of specials would be extremely beneficial. And it's easier than ever with Foursquare 3.0.
I agree. I think as if I were a restaurant owner or something, I think the one special that you had shown on there was the mob special. Is that what they called it?
Yep. You can set like a limit. So if say 10 people are checked in, you can actually set like 10 or 15 or 20 if you want to. But say 10 people are checked in at the same time, all 10 of those people can get half off drinks or something.
I think that's
like that.
That's a really good deal from a restaurant owner specifically, because if I knew I was going out with 9 people, yep, I would like look for that 10th
Absolutely.
Person because I'm a cheap B-word.
And that's another thing from a user standpoint and kind of from a merchant standpoint. They've actually made it easier to search for only locations that have specials running. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking to plan a night, like Josh just mentioned, he could actually say,
I have those nights all the time.
That's right. When he goes out with 20 people to go to the local bar, he can say, only show me the bars that are have some sort of special running so that we can get cheaper drinks tonight. So that's my post for the week.
I think I'm up now. My post was kind of I guess, thought because of today's disaster in Japan with the tsunami earthquake. And I just thought, in looking at my Twitter feed, I remembered back to the Haiti earthquake and how the social world has kind of changed how we get our information when these natural disasters occur. First and foremost, our thoughts are with everyone that was affected.
Mm-hmm.
But I went on and I looked at my Twitter feed and how much of it was consumed by people talking about what was happening, people trying to help, fundraisers, you know, shortly after everyone was awake here in the U.S., already people pushing the fundraisers. And I compared that to back when other disasters had happened, or even not natural disasters, but with 9/11, people sitting around their TV, even with Katrina, people sitting around the TV and just watching the news. I know at those times I'm surprised I made it off my couch because I was like seriously addicted to watching that. And it's like, I don't know if it's everyone's human nature or just us as Americans. It's kind of like that car crash where you have to like, you drive by and you stare just almost hoping to see something. You don't want to see anything, but at the same time you're enamored by that type of thing, which is sad in a way, but at the same time it's human nature. But there's so much talk, and there's in Google, and everyone in the tech industry seems to come together so quickly during these types of things, and it impresses me, and it kind of makes me feel good to be in the industry, such a good industry that does things like that. There was a Google launch, I forget what they called it.
Person locator.
The person locator.
I don't remember the name of it.
It's like a crisis center or something like
that. Yeah. And then, I don't know, it's very interesting. And I have a few tweets that I had just seen in just short time, I think a 20-minute span from various influential people that were talking about it, that when they post messages, it goes out to a lot of people. So I thought that was great. And then there's a site I launched on there. I forget what it was called, or I linked on there. I forget what it was called. You could actually see unfiltered real-time tweets, and it looked like they were basically pulling in something like Google real-time search, but instead of just doing one hashtag at a time, it was just pulling in several hashtags that were related to the incident. Or you could go to Google real-time search and stay up on what's happening by just searching a hashtag. And one of the coolest, in my opinion, things about being able to see what's happening through social is that you're at times getting stuff first from firsthand people that are actually experiencing this. And I know during hurricanes that the newscasters go out and stand in the middle of the hurricane and talk with the wind blowing in the microphone. Right. You can barely hear them and their hair's all up in their face. But it's different because they have put themselves in that situation to do it. They're getting paid to do that. Where these other people are by no choice in these disasters, and they're able to tweet what's happening or say on Facebook. And back with the Haiti earthquake, people's lives were saved because they tweeted.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing, and it's changed so much in such a short time. So I just kind of wanted to mention that and kind of see and hopefully get some feedback and find out what other people do now to get their information when these types of things happen. Because I know there's still people that sit in front of the TV, but at the same time, I think you're more apt to pay attention to your Twitter feed.
Right. I just pulled up the real-time tweets that Josh mentioned. Definitely check out the blog and take a look at those, because pretty crazy stuff that's just, you know, filtered out there. And they're displaying all of it, so go ahead and take a look at that for sure. So I think that's it for this week. That's all of our blog posts. Thank you, of course, as always, for listening and subscribing. I'm going to do my little spiel. If you want to follow us throughout the week, you can go to blog.protocol80.com. That's where we post all of our posts throughout the week that we talk about at the end of the week. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you go to twitter.com/protocol80, that's protocol and then the numbers 80. You can follow us there, send us an @reply, and we'll definitely follow up. Or you can go to facebook.com and give us a like. That's facebook.com/protocol80 also. If you want to subscribe to the podcast and you haven't already, I would recommend going to iTunes and searching for Protocol 80. And we, of course, are the Protocol 80 Over Coffee podcast. So anybody else have anything to add?
I have a short news story. Sure. A friend of mine in Pittsburgh recently launched an iPad app called Traceable. It's at traceableapp.com, or you can look them up at Jay Fanelli on Twitter, J-A-Y-F-A-N-E-L-L-I. Pretty cool app. I haven't played with it because I don't have an iPad, but
I'll definitely take a look.
It's just a basic tracing app, which is pretty cool.
Awesome.
And they're going to be launching a thing. It's almost like a discussion board for web developers, so I think that's something we're going to try to take advantage of when that's launched. So
I did want to mention the one story that I could think of was that this week Google announced the ability to actually filter out certain websites from your search results. They say that that won't affect SEO in any way, but that's certainly a feature that I'm looking forward to using, because websites like Expert Exchange is the one that I think I'm going to filter out first. That bugs me all the time. But so that's kind of cool if you didn't know about that.
There's a 3D preview of the Royal Wedding.
Oh, awesome.
Through Google Earth, so check that out. because it's neat.
iPad 2?
iPad 2. Actually, it's not... The people are lining up as we're recording this. It's coming...
Not us.
Not us. We're certainly not in the line right now. But later on this night, people will be able to actually get their iPads, and I think they've already been shipping as well, so maybe some people have received theirs in the mail.
T-Mobile and one other wireless provider to be named that I don't remember. It's either Sprint or... Is Nextel still around?
I don't know.
I think it's Sprint and T-Mobile might merge.
Yeah, I heard that. Firefox did an HTML5 preview with some 360 stuff.
No video.
360 video.
That's pretty crazy.
South by Southwest is going on, so there's been a lot of tweets about that.
We'll have blog posts and probably talk about it next week in the podcast, some of the news out of that.
And then people will send us our free tickets next year, so
right.
Absolutely.
You'll see us there next year. We might actually do a live podcast from South by South.
That's right.
Next year.
South by Southwest.
Book it. That's right.
I mean, people will probably buy their tickets already, so.
So that's it for this week's episode of the Protocol 80 Over Coffee podcast. We'll talk to you next week, hopefully.
Goodbye.
Yow.
Bye-bye.
Charlie Sheen!